Becoming a full-time writer can be overwhelming. Join Jay Thorne and Zach Bohannon as they help you improve your craft and find your audience so you too can become a career author. This is the Career Author Podcast.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Career Author Podcast. I'm Zach Bohannon. With me every single week is Jay Thorne. How you doing, Jay?
I don't know, man. That sounded borderline sarcastic. I think you pulled out of a, you originally going there and then you pulled out just in time.
That's what she said. New listeners, welcome to the Career Author Podcast.
All right. Hit stop on the recording and start over.
No, no we're not. No, we are not. Totally. That was perfect.
Good timing. Yeah, I totally teed that up for you.
So what's up, dude?
Oh, man. All kind of good stuff. We're getting ready to do a have an in-person meeting. I'm heading to Nashville pretty soon. That's going to be fun. And then, you know, it's cool because the seasons are turning, which means we got our two events coming up, October, November. It's going to be a fun end of the 2018.
Dude, the seasons are turning for sure. I've had my windows and my house open almost all day, which is like, it's been like 65 degrees here.
That's so funny because like I was just going to say, I just closed all the windows in my house because it's like 50 degrees here.
Dude, it's been like, it went from being like 95 to it's been in the 60s all day today. So I've had the windows open. It's been awesome.
Nice. So, that's what I have to look forward to later in the week, I hope.
Well, when you get here, it'll probably be like 90. But I think it's supposed to be decent all week. So I'm happy because I love the fall.
Yeah, so do I. It's a great season.
I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
So yeah, it's gonna be cool.
So, speaking of which, have you seen all the? Well, I'll ask you about that later. So, I was gonna ask you if you've seen all the stuff about the new Halloween movie and all the reviews coming out, but we won't talk about that here.
Okay, well, just real quick though, an aside. It's funny you mention that because last night I took my daughter and her friend to see The Nun, which
oh really,
which was. Not very good. There were great jump scares, but like the story was lacking. But the trailer for the new Halloween played.
Oh yeah, dude. It's like, so like, I guess it premiered at the Toronto Film Fest or something. And like everything has been like, this is the Halloween movie that people have been waiting for since the first one. So,
well, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis is a big name to attach to that. And
it's Blumhouse, which does great horror movies, and like Danny McBride wrote it, which is crazy. You know, the Eastbound and Down dude. So, but it's apparently getting like really rare reviews. And I don't know if you know this, but it's like a direct sequel to the first one. So right. It adores every other one after that.
Yeah.
So
it's, yeah.
Like from what I understand, I don't even think that Laurie Strode is his sister. Mm. So it's fascinating, but yeah. So welcome to the Horror Writers Podcast. No, I'm just kidding. But I'm sorry. We talked about fall. I thought of all that.
Yeah, it works. It all works. Yeah.
So, so cool. I just realized, man, I'm going to be totally blunt because everyone knows us. I'm going to be totally blunt and realize that we didn't look up and see if there's new patrons.
There were not.
Okay, cool. So now that's on the air. Awesome.
Oh man, this is off to a great start. This is going really well.
The funny thing is that you're the one who's done three podcasts in a row now, not me, and I'm fumbling everything right now. So we're doing awesome.
Yeah. Hey, I wonder if where I would go if I was really craving some coffee.
Well, now you just messed up because I was going to save that for later. I was going to do that right before our topic, but I guess I'll do it now. You would head on over to cadencecoffeeroasters.com. And this is my buddy, David, and his wife, Anna's coffee company based out of Denver. He roasts his beans in an awesome little facility he's got at his house every single Saturday ships them out fresh. So when you order from him, you'll be getting the freshest beans possible. Seriously, it's really, really good coffee. And like I said, the Mitchells are good people. So if you want to support his business and get some really good coffee while you're at it to drink while you're riding, head on over to cadencecoffeeroasters.com. Use promo code CAREERAUTHOR at checkout and you'll get 10% off your first order.
We are not affiliates. We're doing that because it's really good coffee.
It's awesome. Yeah. So, and I guess we'll bring it back around. And if you want to check out all the cool stuff we're doing over on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/thecareerauthor. We got some really cool stuff going on over there. We actually just recorded our Amazon product page makeover for this month. We'll be watching Dead Poets Society and doing an episode analyzing that. And you'll get access to those and every episode of those we've done up till now. So check all that out at patreon.com/thecareerauthor, where you can support us and get access to all that for as little as $1 a month. So Jay, we got one other little announcement thing on here. You want to take that so I don't mess anything else up?
Yeah. If you're listening to the podcast episodes as they come out, this is your last chance in mid-September to comment on any of the previous episodes, and you will be entered to win the Mark Leslie Lefebvre Memorial giveaway ticket for Night of the Writing Dead, where we give you the ticket that Mark unfortunately cannot use anymore, as long as you can get yourself to Pittsburgh and put yourself up for Saturday night for a weekend in October, or first weekend of October. You can be eligible for that. We're just going to pick a random commenter off of the comments, and that could be on the Patreon comments, or it could be on the careerauthor.com, the Facebook plugin comments. Either one will on any of the last episodes since we've announced it, but this is the last week, your last chance.
Yeah. So jump by and leave us a comment and of what you would like us to talk about on the show. We would love your suggestions. And so, you know, give us some more ideas. We'd love to hear them. So with that, we will jump into Jay's ways and Zach's hacks. And Jay has a productivity way for us today.
Yeah. The topic for today's show is publishing tools and the ever-changing process.
I didn't do that either at the top. This is awesome.
Zach is on his A game today.
It's weather, man. It's just totally getting to me.
I wanted to mention that. I'm not busting your balls. I just wanted to mention that because the way is going to tie into the topic for today. And it's a bit of a hodgepodge of stuff, but I think it's all things that are related to publishing tools and publishing process. And I think one of the takeaways from this episode that we're going to talk about is this idea that this whole self-publishing thing is constantly changing, and you have to be paying attention to the processes and the tools, because if you don't, you can have issues with compatibility, you could be sacrificing sales, you could be spending money where you don't have to, and hopefully we're going to save you all that. We're going to save you some time and money and hassle by talking about some of these tools and the process. So that's the framework for the show, and the way this week is around productivity. And I think this is a tool. Again, we're not affiliates, and it's a free tool, so that we gain nothing if you use this.
I've never even heard of this.
So yeah, this is pretty cool. So the way is a website, and it's one I've been using for years. It's called kanbantool.com, KanBantool.com. Now, a Kanban board is something that comes from the world of entrepreneurship, and it's basically, it's dividing up a chart into three columns. It's basically like things that need to be done, things that are in progress, things that are completed. So you use it in project management. Now, what's cool about KanBantool.com is that you can create these boards virtually. So imagine you have a big whiteboard, and you can divide it up into columns or different shapes, and then you can put post-it notes in the different columns. That's basically what KanBantool.com does. I use it for everything from like yearly overview. I'll do like by quarter, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, and like things I have to do or major things on the horizon. Like my next course at JCU is January, so Q1 of 2019. I'll just put, you know, JCU course, and I just know like that's on my radar, something I'm thinking about. But you could use a Kanban tool as part of your launch plan. Like you could build it out. You could use it for an anthology. You could use it for story production. You can use a Kanban board for just about anything that's project management related. And here's what I think is really cool about this. You know, I have used and still use whiteboards and post-it notes, and I put post-it notes up on my wall. And someone could say, well, isn't that like, what's so special about Kanban tool? I can do that with my whiteboard or my post-it notes. And it's true, you can. Here's the benefit. If you're someone like us, or you don't have a dedicated writing space, or you don't have the space at all, the kanbantool.com has a free app for both iOS and for Droid. And you can pull it up on any computer. So if you're at the coffee shop, if you are downstairs in the basement, if you're out somewhere and you're like, I need to look at my board, but it my whiteboard's at home, what do I do? Kanbantool.com is a great tool for that. So if you want to check it out, again, it's a totally free tool, kanbantool.com. I don't know. I have probably 3 or 4 boards that I use. So you can have multiple boards. I don't know if there's a limit or if there's a premium version, but it's super simple. It does one thing. It does it really well. And I think it's a nice addition for anyone who's looking for a great way to manage a project.
Yeah, I like the Kanban method. I read up on that not too long ago, and it's a really good method. And like you, I prefer the digital tools because I can have with me anywhere. I know a lot of people like to have physical stuff and like planners and stuff, but that's not me personally. But I don't like on a planner. Like if I don't do something that day, I don't want to have to write it down again the next day. I want to be able to just click and drag it and move it to the next day.
Yeah, good point.
I'm getting into something totally different. But yeah, so that's a really good way, Jay. Kanbantool.com. That's awesome. So,
yeah.
Excellent. All right. So we'll jump into the main topic since I don't have to talk about coffee right now like I was going to. KidsCoffeeRushers.com. Use career author. Get 10% off first order. But we'll go ahead and jump in. So Jay, why don't you go ahead and introduce us to the topic?
Yeah, we're going to talk about some publishing tools and the ever-changing process. In fact, this was spurred by an email I got from KDP last week around Kindle Create, which we're going to talk about in a moment. And also goes back to my days of hand-coding books, and I even had a guide how to format your book for Kindle. And I still get questions from people about the best way to get their book compatible with Kindle, and I'm kind of surprised those questions are still out there, so I think it's good to talk about this. But related to that, related to the publishing tools and the process, I wanted to just briefly talk about something that's news related. And I know that we've gotten away from the news segment and people seem to like the ways and the hacks instead, but this one was something that tied into what we're talking about, and it really is something I have a divergent opinion on, and I wanted to maybe just kind of bounce around with you for a little bit and talk about it and see what your thoughts are. I think you were the one that sent me the link. This was a good e-reader link, I believe, and it was on the troubles the Barnes & Noble are in, and sort of their unofficially abandoning Nook, and it also happened at the same time that the former CEO of Barnes & Noble has filed some type of, I don't know, discrimination or defamation lawsuit.
But the main thing about the article was that, like, if you've walked into a Barnes & Noble anytime within the last 10 years, like, one of the first things you see is the Nook display. Mm-hmm. Like, always been there. Well, they're taking those out. Like, the Nook is not, I don't even think the Nook is going to be, like, at the point of sale, the POS systems anymore. Like, I think they're moving them to the back of the store.
Yeah. Here's what's interesting about this. As best as I could tell, and I think this might have been on Passive Voice, but don't quote me because I don't know if this is the exact source, but it might have been on Forbes maybe. There was an article about the Nook and about the Walmart Kobo partnership, which we're also going to talk about. But the point was that Amazon has a stranglehold. The Kindle has a stranglehold on ebooks. They're something like 87 or 88% of market share. And Kobo's the next, but it was like single digits. And surprisingly, Barnes & Noble was like less than 2% before all of this came out. And it really made me think, like, well, what really is the value of going wide? If the Nook only has 2% of the market share, how important is it to be on Barnes & Noble? And now even less so, right? Like, I don't know, like, I don't want to bring this into an Amazon versus wide conversation, but I'm looking at it from a pragmatic perspective. The other thing I want to talk about was Walmart and Kobo. This partnership's brand new. It's only a few weeks old. But and I love Kobo. We love Chrissy. We're supporting what they're doing. But I don't get it. Like I don't understand this partnership, and I fear I fear that maybe Kobo got into bed with the wrong partner, because I don't see the connection. Like, if Walmart wants to make a play for the ebook customer, like, the people who are walking into Walmart are not people reading ebooks. You know, like, the people who shop at Walmart, if they're going to buy books, they're going to buy the paper books in Walmart. They're not going to, like, buy the Kobo in Walmart and then go home and buy the ebook off of walmart.com. It just doesn't make sense to me. I'm wondering if you have any perspective on this.
Man, that's a mighty generalization of Walmart's clientele there and their customer base.
I'm
busting.
No, balls. But it totally is. I don't know what their customer base is. I'm just looking at it from a pragmatic perspective. Like, Walmart's e-site is way behind Amazon. Like, that's not where Walmart's making its revenue. That's not where they're making their money.
So let me ask you this. Like, who would have been a better partner for Kobo to partner with?
Because
they need to, the truth is they need to expand their distribution in the US if they want to compete.
Yeah.
They have to. So, like, I guess you could make the argument that maybe Target would be better. Like, you know, maybe Target would be, you know, I don't know. Like, to me personally, I think I don't have enough information. I think it's too early to tell. Like, we don't know. I get where you're coming from. Like, you know, Walmart sells, I don't know. Like, it feels like you could almost make that same argument about a lot of their stuff at Walmart. Like, who's going there in there to buy, like, a painting canvas or something? They sell those too. Like, I don't.
That's a physical product.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this might seem weird, but I've bought, like, digital download cards from Walmart before for video games.
Yeah, so,
like, it might seem weird that I've done that, but, like, it was just I think it was because maybe I had, like, a gift card or something. It wasn't necessarily, which kind of goes against your point, I guess, a little bit. But
well, I think too, like, let's be real about it. This is not a judgment. Walmart's whole thing is low price. That they've built their entire empire on that. That it's a budget brand. They wear that on their sleeve. So I think if you're going to Walmart, you're going there because they have the lowest prices on stuff. So if you're in Walmart or you go there to buy a book, are you going to look at the, you know, $200 e-reader, or are you going to buy, like, the $4 mass paperback that's on sale?
Well, in their defense, they did introduce an exclusive Kobo reader for Walmart that is cheap.
What do you know what it is by any
chance? It's under $100. Okay. I want to say it's like $80 or something.
Yeah, that's still a far cry from a $5 paperback.
If it's being displayed right, it depends on their promotion. Like, that could still be an impulse purchase for people.
Yeah,
like, some people might buy that.
Yeah,
but, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but to me, like, I think it's too early to say whether or not this is a good or bad thing. Like, you can have your opinions of where you think it's going to go. Mm-hmm. Like, do I think that this is going to help them make a dent in what Amazon's doing? I really don't, if I have to be honest. And again, I love Kobo too, but, like, I think that they've got to try something to try to compete. And I guess we're going to find out whether or not this partnership was the right or the wrong move. Like, we're going to find out eventually.
Well, and I don't, like, let's step back. Like, I also think my reason for bringing this up and my reason for wanting to talk about the Barnes & Noble story, it gets back to this idea of, like, if Amazon is that dominant, then, you know, if they do, in fact, let's say it's conservative, let's say it's 87% of the market share conservatively, and Barnes & Noble, who is, maybe they haven't been the real competitor, but they've been sort of the torch-bearing competitor for against Amazon for a long time, right? People always thought it was like Barnes & Noble versus Amazon. If Barnes & Noble goes away as an author, how much value is there in being wide? Like, is the percentage of possible ROI in that small sliver that isn't Amazon worth it?
It depends where those customers go.
Yeah.
Like, what if they sell Nook off to Kobo or to Apple, let's say Kobo. And then, like, all those people's audio, like, books get transferred over to a Kobo, you know,
maybe.
Like, I mean, so I think that there's some variables there. Like, me personally, like, I, you know, you know, I, and I've talked about this before, like I have my main personal, all our stuff is in, like, is in KDP, like stuff you and I do, but like my personal backlist and like especially my main six book zombie series is wide. And you know, I'm not making a living off that stuff, but each one of those platforms makes me several hundred dollars a month. Mm-hmm. So like, and Nook does pretty decent. Like it's not great, but it's all more money than that series was making in KU when I pulled it out of KU.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. Like it's for me, and maybe if I went back into KU now after the series has been out for a while, like maybe it would pick up, but you know, it wasn't worth it for me to be in KU anymore. And Wide has worked for me personally.
Yeah. So, and to be clear, like I'm rooting for Kobo. Like I want them to do well. I want, even if they don't make a big dent in Amazon's market share, I want them to force Amazon to pay more attention to authors because Amazon loves the readers. They're not as keen on the authors. And I think if there's any sort of, even if it's a perception that there's a threat and, you know, someone to threaten the marketplace, then it can only mean good things for those of us with a lot of our titles in Select. So I'm rooting for Kobo. I'm just like, at this point in time, I have titles wide. I have titles loaded directly to Kobo, titles loaded directly to Barnes & Noble. But at this time, I'm kind of on in wait and see mode. Like I'm not one of those authors who's looking to completely ditch, get out of KU and run elsewhere. I'm kind of in a wait and see place right now.
I have my feet in both. Like mm-hmm. that's kind of my deal. Is like I have a little bit wide, and I'm, you know, building a mailing list over there, and I'm building up sales and stuff and a readership. But like I'm still like launching in KU and have most of my eggs in that basket.
Yeah.
You know? And I want to touch on something you said, you know, and because I think a lot of authors get caught up in like the whole like Amazon doesn't care about us thing. I want to make it very clear, like it's not just Amazon cares about the readers and not about authors. Amazon cares about their customer and not right. their readers. Like it's a very broad thing. And I've seen this, like I've said before, like at my old job, I mean, Amazon just came to my old job one day out of nowhere and were like, we want you guys to write us a $50,000 check for all the stuff we've done. Like, and it was just like, and we didn't do it and we fought back and my company had a little bit of leverage because of the category we were in and what we, where our sales were, but like, they don't care about their vendors. They care about their customers. So like, it's a broad thing. It's not just like, they're just picking on their authors. So I want to make that really clear.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a weird time, man. It's one of those things, like you said, like you just got to be paying attention and like, you know, and you know, you and I have had, you know, very, we've had different experiences wide,
yeah,
you know, like, so it's not like there's a, this is really a personal thing. And, you know, it's just a weird thing. And I see authors who are like ahead of where we are and have been doing this longer than us. Like I see some of them like going, I'm pulling all my stuff out of KU. I'm going wide. And then I see other ones who've been wide saying, like seven, like guys making like seven figures going, oh, I'm putting all my stuff in KU because mm-hmm. Wide is not worth it. You know? So it's, there's like, you just have to pay attention. You have to come to your own conclusion based on the information you have and don't be scared to try stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And unless you have a series that's killing it in KU, don't get greedy and then pull out and go wide. Cause I try to do that. So, yeah.
All right. Well, then let's transition a little bit and talk about the publishing tools and the process, because last week KDP unveiled what they're calling Kindle Create, and it's a formatting tool that will allow you to upload a basic Word document, and much like the Draft to Digital and the service and Vellum, you can use a graphical interface to create the file that then gets uploaded into KDP. Unlike Draft to Digital and Vellum, it only formats into a format for Kindle.
That was my question. So this is like, yeah, you could make the argument if you're in KU, this is great. But like, if you want to use BookFunnel or something, like BookFunnel requires you to have an EPUB.
Right. That's so, correct.
Like, mm-hmm. So this would not be a good tool if you want to be able to like send out ARCs and stuff for.
Right. And this is also a different version, or not a different version, a different piece of software. Like, maybe last year, the year before, I forget what it's called. It might be Comic Creator, but Kindle released a tool that would allow people who do like graphic novels and comic books and children's books, the ability to compile and format something, again, just for Amazon, but a tool that will allow you to format it perfectly to fit. So the reason I'm bringing this up now is because Amazon just released this, in addition to Draft to Digital and their free conversion tool and the paid service of Vellum, which we use and we love as well, you have a number of choices that will take care of the formatting for you. And what it means is that you really, and this hurts me to say because I'm an HTML guy going way back, we're really, I think, past the point where you should be formatting your own books. If none of these services, if you're not comfortable with any of these services, you'd be better off hiring someone to do the formatting for you, and so that they can hand you a Mobi and an EPUB. But as far as, like, you know, any type of formatting issues, any type of formatting specifications, the problem I ran into and why I stopped doing this is that Amazon will often change their specifications. And so a book that was working perfectly fine on, like, you know, an earlier version of Kindle looks terrible or is all out of alignment on, like, the Paperwhite. And you have no way of knowing that. And sometimes it shows up in reviews. So it's almost risky to do the formatting yourself as opposed to using one of these tools. And both the Kindle formatting and the Draft to Digital tool are completely free.
Yeah. And you know, we said before, like, we used the Vellum one because, you know, that's, I got into it and bought it early on. And but it'll show you what your book looks like on a Paperwhite, on a Fire, in paperback. Like, if you do a physical book, like, it lets you preview it right there on the screen as you're making it. And you know, the other advantage too, I think, and you might have been good enough at the HTML part where you could do this, but I know that, like, if you use these program like Vellum, like, it also gets your file down to, like, a really small size to where, like, the delivery cost that Amazon charges is, like, minute, is very, very minimal. It's way cheaper than it was when I used to do all my formatting with Scrivener.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
Not way cheaper, but it's definitely better.
Yeah, so. And that's a good point. If you have any type of title that is graphically heavy, whether it's a picture book or you have a lot of photos in it or charts or something like that, the delivery costs can eat into your royalties. And when I did it with HTML, like, I have the Post-Apocalyptic Reader's Guide. And that is, there's a ton of images in that, but I was able to, with both Photoshop and HTML, I was able to get it under the threshold to list it at 99 cents. And if I had used any other tool, even some of these tools, it would have been, I couldn't have priced it at 99 cents. It would have had to have been $2.99 or more based on the file size. I'm an outlier for that particular book. Like, that's not something that most people are going to deal with. And so I think if you're doing novels or narrative nonfiction or mostly text-based titles, then you're pretty safe going with any of these three tools.
Yeah, and they're great and they're easy to use and it'll save you a ton of time and your book will look great.
Yeah. So. And now, as of now in 2018, what you're aiming for is a Mobi and an EPUB. So your Mobi is what you're going to use for Amazon. Your EPUB is the file format you need in the other marketplaces. Now, some marketplaces have different requirements on what needs to be inside the EPUB. So you might have to make different versions for different retailers, like an iTunes version versus a Barnes & Noble version. But even so, something else that came up recently, and I think her name was Kinga. She was on Joanna's podcast a few weeks back. PublishDrive. PublishDrive is now a third-party aggregator like Draft to Digital. They've been around. They're not just new. They've been around, but, like, they're really starting to make a push, and they're distributing into other places that Draft to Digital doesn't. So as far as the ever-changing publication process, if you have a title that is not in Kindle Unlimited, and you're already using Draft to Digital to distribute your books to other retailers, PublishDrive might be an option you want to consider. I don't know the exact marketplaces, but I know that there are entire marketplaces, some of them in China, I think. You know, there are India, there are untapped markets that are haven't been able to reach in any other way. So I think this might be a great place for people to experiment, and it doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah, and that's cool. Even if you are using like draft to digital like I am, like I might look into that just for those other markets.
Yeah, exactly.
Like not you, like I'm not gonna take my books off to draft to digital that are already on there, but I might go into some of those other markets on there. That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so. you don't have to make the choice. You can have titles on both of those. And it's on my list because I just heard the episode recently, so it's on my list to really investigate because it can't hurt. To be in more places.
Exactly. If you're gonna be wide, you may as well be everywhere you can.
Yeah.
Like the only major in quotes platform that I'm not on is Google, because Google had that whole thing where you couldn't make a new account for a while. I don't know if it's been lifted.
Well, and you can get to play through Publish Drive.
Okay.
So
I've been weird about going through it because they had some issues on there I just didn't want to deal with.
Yeah.
They do some, apparently they were doing some weird things with price changing on Google.
Oh yeah. I did hear that. Yeah.
And people were getting like plagiarized. Like I'm not saying like what you and I always talk about, like people were like having their books sold like as if it was them by other people, which I'm not cool with.
Yeah.
Being on a torrent site or whatever. Like, I don't care, but I don't want people on Google selling my books as if it's
me. As Zach Bohannon on Google when it's not you. Yeah,
there was some weird stuff going on with that.
And yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. So that also then opens up another related conversation, which is format. So when we're talking about publishing and process, one of the things that you can't escape is format. What formats should you be publishing in? Now, you and I have said many times on the show and in other places that we know our readers, and our readers are predominantly reading us on e-readers. However, that doesn't mean we don't have paper available. We know we're not going to sell a lot of paper, but we make our books available in both ebook and in paperback, and a number of our books are available as audiobooks. And I know that, we've experimented. We've done royalty shares for audiobooks. We've signed a contract with Tantor. I've got one with Podium. We're hitting the audiobook market in a number of different ways. Findaway Voices is now coming on with the ability to sell direct. I'm wondering, Zach, at this point in 2018, what are your thoughts on formats? Like, is there a minimum author should have? Is there a sweet spot? Does it matter to the reader how many formats are shown? What are your thoughts on that?
I think when you come to a page, like on a sales page, like if you see the more formats you see, I think the more pro it makes your book look. Like if you just have ebook, I think it looks a little weird, but if you've also got audio and paperback, and some people like to do hardcover.
Yeah.
Like I think all that makes your book look a little more pro, and it gives readers more options. Like I don't believe in trying to direct people to a certain format. Like, some people like to read paperback books, not a ton of my readers, but people do buy them. So like, I'm going to have that available. When it makes sense and when it's financially possible, I want to have the audiobook available. Now, audiobooks is a little different. Like, not everyone is in a position where they can do audiobooks and maybe should do audiobooks, because it can get expensive. And there's no guarantee that you're going to make that money back or sell a bunch of audiobooks. So, I'm a big fan of letting the reader choose what format they want to experience my book in and not dictate that. I'll give you an example. Like that's, I was having this conversation with my buddy and we were talking about Tool, and Tool is like anti-digital on music, and, or they were for a long time. I don't know if it's changed. And it was like, and he's like, well, they want people to list their stuff on CDs. So that's how they're going to do it. I don't want to buy a freaking CD in 2018.
Yeah.
That's not how I want to listen to my music. I do not want to buy a CD, So like, I just won't listen to them. So like, I don't care like how smug they want to be about it. Like, it's just, don't dictate what format you want me to read a book in. So like, I say, I'll just say like, at a minimum, I think you should at least have the Kindle and a paperback version available. And then, audiobook would be next if you can do that. And then again, I know some indies that do hardcover. I don't know anyone who's like crushing with it. And that's a little more expensive from what I understand. But that's something I like to do eventually, but it's not really on my radar right now.
Do you think the format conversation is something that's specific to each generation? And here's why I ask this. I'm going to make a sweeping generalization because that's what I do. I just sweepingly generalize everybody. But the baby boomers who I know, they basically, a lot of them will do what they're told. Like if a company or like, let's say an author said, okay, here's my book. The only way you can get it's paperback. I know several baby boomers who would just be like, well, that's the only way I can get it. So I'm just going to buy that. Millennials, on the other hand, they want to decide. So if you took that same approach with a millennial, they'd be like, well, screw you. I'm not buying it then. Whereas a millennial wants to like say, I want to buy it in this format and I want to consume it the way I want to consume it. So do you think that's too broad of a generalization?
I mean, overall, maybe not. Like the first person I think about is my dad and my mom, you know, and like my dad is totally a Kindle person, mm-hmm. and won't buy a physical book. Like it almost wouldn't matter. Like he would do an audiobook or a Kindle book, but he wouldn't buy a physical book in 2018, you know? I don't know. Like it's, I see what you're saying. And it's probably,
my mom will only like, she watches her television shows, but she still sits down at the day and time it's on because like, that's when it's broadcast. Whereas yeah. like, I guess Generation X is in the middle, but like millennials be like, screw you. I'm going to stream this when I want, like when I'm at the gym or what.
See, and again, that's how my parents are. My parents never watch anything. They always, you know, my parents are in their 60s, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, they DVR everything.
Interesting.
You know, yeah. and they're pretty much digital on everything. They don't own physical movies anymore. They buy them digitally or stream them. Like they're, maybe my parents are just hip. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But you know, I think yeah. though, like to your point, I think it makes sense to make your works available in whatever formats you can afford and ones you can do and not try and force behavior, because I think the only one that's going to lose in that situation is you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So. As a little addendum to that, to the publishing process, I know this is also something that came up recently. You know, we all know that CreateSpace is going away, and it didn't surprise anyone who's been paying any attention whatsoever. And what's going to happen is you can manually move your titles with a few clicks from CreateSpace into KDP paperback. And I don't know what the exact deadline is, but at a certain point, any active titles that you have in your CreateSpace account will be automatically moved for you. Now, before that sounds like a good idea, I want to give a shout out to Lori in our Facebook group who mentioned this, and I'm glad she did because I checked. And you might have old titles in your CreateSpace account, and if you don't do anything with them, they will port over. And it's not that they're going to be necessarily active, but it's going to be another title in your KDP dashboard. And if you've been around for more than a few years, you probably already have a ton of titles in your KDP dashboard and drafts and things you've unpublished. At least I know I do. And it makes it more of a mess. And what Lori's suggestion was, which I did, and CreateSpace took care of it right away, is you can ask them to quote unquote retire a title. So basically what it will do is prevent that title from being ported over automatically when KDP pulls them. And then you can decide on a title by title basis, whether you want to upload it to KDP paperback or whether it's a title you just want to permanently get rid of. Now, what it doesn't do, and this has also been the bane of my existence for a lot of my hassles with Author Central. If it was for sale on CreateSpace and you retire it, it has nothing to do with it showing up in the Amazon marketplace. If the title is available for sale on Amazon, it will always be there, at least for as of now, because Amazon leaves it there for used book purposes. So just because you retire a title or just because you unpublish it in your KDP account doesn't mean you're removing it from Amazon, and it's still linked to your author page. So just beware of that.
But let me ask you, and you might know the answer, you might not, like when they migrate the books over, is it going to link them up with your ebook in your dashboard?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure. And because I wasn't sure and didn't want to spend the time to figure it out, I just went in and asked CreateSpace to retire it. And I thought, you know what, I'll deal with that later. Like it's not something I want to be doing at the moment, but it's a good question. Does it come over live or does it come over as a draft? And I don't know the answer to that.
So are you just going to let your books come over to KDP though?
Well, no, I moved them. When we first had the option, I spent an afternoon and I just moved every title manually.
And then you had them retire all them.
Yeah. Well, once they moved, they disappeared from my CreateSpace account. The ones I had in my CreateSpace account were ones that I had like unpublished, but not retired. Some books I created drafts, or some books I published with no distribution channels as like author copies. So like I had a copy of Risen Gods with Joanna in my CreateSpace account. I had that so that I could print off print on demand copies for like book signings and local talks. Oh, yeah. But I don't want that going on sale on Amazon. So I retired that title.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So there's lots. I think that, you know, to bring it full circle, really, I think the important takeaway here is you got to be paying attention to this stuff, and, you know, listen to podcasts like ours, listen to the Creative Pen, to the Somewhere Book Show. You really
don't listen to the Somewhere Book Show.
Yeah, scratch that.
I got something to say about them, but I'll save it for an outro. I'm going to say it on air.
All right. So, you know, I think the point here is like, you got to be paying attention to this stuff or reading the blogs, listening to the podcast, but it does change. And that's the nature of this business. And there's no point in getting upset about it or complaining or wishing it was the way it used to be, because it just isn't going to be that way forever. Things are constantly, constantly changing. And that's part of being in this. It's what you have to accept to be in part of this game. So, you know, hopefully we can help you out. Hopefully you got some tips here. And if you got any questions or comments about the tools or the process, hit us up.
Right on. Good stuff. Well, all right. Well, I guess I'll make fun of those guys really quick before we.
Yeah, I want to hear it now.
So last week we were the number two news story on their show. Like they brought up something we talked about, and then we had a meeting with Jim and Brian this last week about Somewhere Book Show Summit 2019. Which, by the way, if you want to get tickets for that, you can go to somewherebookshow.com/summit. And, that'd be our conference in Chicago. We're like we sold a lot of tickets, so you might want to jump over there and grab one. But you know, they were like, yeah, we talked about you guys. But what they didn't say was they never say anything about how we make fun of them on here. So what's happening is they're not listening. It's Brian's assistant who's listening and got that segment. So Brian's assistant, if you're listening, don't tell them we're making fun of them, because we're going to keep doing it. But you can just laugh, and this joke can just be between us.
Yeah, it's an inside joke. So,
yeah.
Internet, don't tell anybody.
Yeah, we mentioned you guys, and we're like, yeah, that's cool. Thanks. Yeah. We mention you guys too sometimes on our show, but you clearly don't know that we're dogging y'all over here. So. And by the way, we're totally joking. Like, go listen to their show. It's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. This is all good nature. There's nothing else involved here. So.
And then, I mean, they're never going to hear this. So, you know, we can say whatever we want, you know. And whatever. So, but well, cool. Well, all right. Well, then we'll jump out. And remember, you know, if you want a chance at winning our Mark Leslie Lefebvre RIP memorial ticket, then just leave a comment. Let us know what you want us to talk about on the show, and that'll enter you to come join us in Pittsburgh in October. It's gonna be a ton of fun. Or I guess I should say in a few weeks. My God,
yeah,
coming up. But yeah, and with that, I guess we'll go ahead and head on out of here and get rid of this train wreck for this week. So I'm Zach, that's Jay. We'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
Later.